This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Want to talk a little hockey? Why are we asking? Of course you do. This is Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
To try to negotiate a contract, and we gave it our best shot. We worked hard at it with Brandon and his agent. Weren't able to reach an agreement. When that became apparent, then we turned our focus to trying to improve our team for next season.
Stan Bowman, the general manager of the Chicago Blackhawks, and the price of success, they say, is hard work. Nowadays in the National Hockey League, the price of success is salary cap problems. And he explains why just a couple of weeks after winning the Stanley Cup, the Chicago Blackhawks had to trade Brandon Saad in a big deal yesterday with the Columbus Blue Jackets. We welcome you to our NHL free agent frenzy coverage getting underway on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, first of all, a happy Canada Day. A great day off and a great day to appreciate all of us who are so fortunate to live in this country and now get to sit around and see what happens on the NHL free agent frenzy day. We'll be on till 11 a.m. and then we'll take the Sportsnet coverage, free agent frenzy, continuing all day. Gord Stellick, Matthew Barnaby on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Happy Canada Day. Happy Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs Day for all GMs out there. We know it'll be a nutty one, but nice to be in the studio.
You know something, we call it... trade deadline was, I never heard the word frenzy, but it's really changed. It's not really a trade deadline anymore. It's expiring contracts for draft picks. This is a little bit of everything. This is the NHL big department store. So you've got your free agents out there, the Cody Francis of the world. Then wait a sec, over here you got just available, Alexander Semin, P.A. Parento, all those other guys. Tainted Goods, Mike Richards, what's going over on this pile? Big trades, Brandon Saad, all that. You got a little collage of everything. And from what used to be the unrestricted free agents being signed, now there's so many different variables.
It's all in a cap world. We get down to cap numbers. And that's the reality of the business now. If you're, you know, if you win, you're going to lose some big name players. It's happened a few times with Chicago now. We saw when they won the cup in 2010, guys were made expendable. And the same thing happens now. A guy like Brandon Saad, you expect, is going to get signed long term. He's going to be a key cog in their wheel as they go forward. But the reality is, when you can't sign players because you win, they're going to want more money. And in a cap world, you have to make tough, tough decisions. So There's going to be a lot of players signed today, and I think if we look at now, the draft is as exciting as a trade deadline day. And when you look at free agency, you look at all the teams that are maybe near the top that think they can be contenders that are going to make a splash today. They're going to go in and get that guy. Maybe it's not the biggest names today. Maybe it's not the biggest free agent class. But guys still think that maybe a Bolesky can put them over the top, or maybe an Ehrhoff can put them over the top on a short-term deal. We saw Richards last year sign on for $2 million. Who's that guy this year for those top echelon teams that they believe can get on a short-term deal for a contender? And then you got guys that teams that think they might have a chance at making the playoffs. If they get one of these free agents, a top six guy, maybe a top nine forward, maybe a fifth D or a fourth D. So a lot is going to happen. There's going to be a lot of movement today. And as always, money, I said it. I'm not going to say it once today. I'm not going to say, man, that's a lot of money for that guy. Or, man, did they overpay. We know they're going to overpay. That's a part of free agency.
And by the way, Chris Johnson will be joining us in about 5 minutes' time. Of course, senior columnist for Sportsnet.ca and on Sportsnet. And was ahead of the curve along with Elliot Friedman about the Brandon Saad trade. Jarmo Kekäläinen will be joining us as well, the general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets. And Matt, there's something, I'll bring it up with Chris about keeping teams together. I'm going to bring up an idea, so I'll get your opinion on it then, and Chris's as well. But the Mike Richards situation, when people first threw it at me, I go, oh, yeah, there's been a lot of contracts that are simply revoked in the NHL in one matter of one day unilaterally by management, like zero. So, first of all, a lot of empathy for whatever these allegations are. And obviously, as you see, it plays out. The LA Kings have, yes, got permission from the league that basically from their point of view, the contract is null and void. Obviously, it's going to be appealed. I would think, obviously, it won't be null and void unless this would be an incredible precedent. But it, what it's done, it's kind of like a lot of people that pay off their line of credit with their line of credit. You know, so it's going to buy them some time.
Yeah. When you look at the situation, and they are still allegations, and I don't want to get into what they are. I mean, there are rumors out there. You hope they're false.
Well, the one that's been published, the one just about being caught with a certain kind of prescription drugs crossing the border. That's the one allegation that has been out there. Who knows what it is? But anyway,
The first one I heard was a different drug.
Yeah.
But again, I don't like to speculate what we think it is, and if it is a prescription drug, whatever it may be. Let's say that's the case. They are buying time, LA. This is the easiest way for them to get some cap space. They go from roughly $3.5 million to about $9.3, $9.4 million in cap space now. Do I think the contract will be null and void? No. I think they're going to find a way. And if Mike Richards was Sidney Crosby, or let's say Anze Kopitar, and this was the allegations upon him, they wouldn't be ripping up the contract. They'd be finding a solution to the problem. Mike Richards is no longer, and this is I've been in this position. I've been catered to as an athlete. I've been teams bent over backwards to have me in their lineup. And then when you get older and you can't produce anymore, you're thrown away. Mm-hmm. And that's the reality of sports. We know that going in.
Life.
Of course. If we can't help Sportsnet, you're going to be gone. If you don't bring something to the table, Mike Richards doesn't bring anything to the table anymore. And that's the reality of life. If you're not contributing to your employer, to your job, and really you are hurting them, they're going to find any way they can to get you out of there. And that's just the reality of life. So this is, I don't think, a big deal going forward. I'm not going to say it's not a big deal. I think it will be resolved. The contract will not be null and void. They will have to pay the buyout. Does it hurt them in the trade? Yes, they're not going to be able to trade that contract like they were talking to Edmonton and Calgary, and that's obviously disappeared. But this will come to a resolution. We hope that Mike Richards, if he does have a problem, that he's able to fix this. And bigger than the hockey part and everything is the life part. But this certainly reeks of them just trying to buy a little time and get that line of credit for a little while.
Well, even before, I mean, it's way bigger money now, Matt, but I can think back, as you mentioned, whatever the era may be, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000, whatever. But it'd be the kind of thing that when things are going well and the player's going well and he gets hurt, you're going to you'll fly in the top specialists from everywhere. You know, the modern day, whatever, but just you'll fly them in. When the guy's not going well and then he says he's hurt, you can see everyone collectively roll their eyes as he walks out, faker, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Just whatever. Just
absolutely.
Send him home. He's hurt. Who cares? Just get him away. Get him out of here. Don't get him away from the players.
We don't want to, and I don't want to use that word, but we don't want him to be a cancer in the dressing
room.
And that's what people say.
Well, and that's why for a lot of people out there that see the big contracts and you try to get people to identify with post-careers for players. Yeah. I mean, look what the Steve Montador tragedy we bring up, but just about, it's not just the money. It's all of a sudden you are getting your butt kissed to a degree like you can't believe. And then 2 years later, you feel you're the same guy, but you're not of value. You're still getting good coin, but you know you're not one of the guys. And then 2 years after that, you're not drawing a paycheck. And you're going, what the hell happened?
The hardest thing is retiring. And if we do radio, or you do TV, or you do your job, and you retire at 65, 70, it's a lot different than retiring at 35. And that's what the tough thing is. You're put on a pedestal at such a young age. You're paid a lot of money. And you live a lifestyle accustomed to that. So I think programs being brought in to start your career and end your career are paramount in making guys a little bit more comfortable with the transition. Find transition. Find a way to get yourself busy. Structure. For me, I'm a structured person. I like to do things, and I like everything to be in a line. Once you retire, you're kind of on your own. You never hear from the teams again. You know, you have your small little group of friends, but you're done. Don't wait by that phone and think someone's just going to call you to become a scout or a general manager or an assistant coach. It doesn't happen that way. So you have to prepare yourself. And I think the way that the NHLPA and hopefully the NHL are all buying in and making it easier to transition, because I know a lot of guys that struggle with it very, very much every day.
Well, I'll tell you something. A guy who's going to have a busy day today joining us, and then we'll be part of the coverage that begins at 11 a.m. on Sportsnet wall-to-wall. Chris Johnson from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. And, you know, Chris, Gord Stellick, Matt Barnaby here, of course, kicking things off on Sportsnet, 590 The Fan. And as Matthew talked about things, I put you on a pedestal, but then I give you tough love. But it's all for your own good. You know that, huh?
I appreciate that. Yeah. I'm glad you got my back.
I heard you yesterday on Primetime Sports, and here we're supposed to be talking about free agent frenzy, but you could have won a lot of money in Las Vegas a couple of weeks ago saying Dougie Hamilton would be a Calgary Flame and especially Brandon Saad would be a Columbus Blue Jacket. Jarkko Kekäläinen is going to be joining us in a few minutes' time, but to your understanding, how did this all come about, the team that was supposed to move either Patrick Sharp and or Brian Bickell to keep Brandon Saad deciding to go a different way?
Well, it's a reflection, really, of today and the fact that Brandon Saad could have signed an offer sheet today. I guess he still could if the Blue Jackets don't get his name on a contract by noon. But that forced a deal for Chicago. They're in a big cap bind, which is no secret to anyone. And with them being unable to move those other players, they decided to go ahead with Brandon Saad. And, you know, I really do believe that was just the threat of an offer sheet, which is something we obviously don't see very much in general in the league anymore. But, that forced Chicago's hand, and they just had to maximize the value they could get for him.
Chris, you talk about offer sheets, and when I saw your tweet yesterday, literally, I think my fingerprints and thumbprints from clicking on Twitter and trying to see more and then going back through it, just recapping it all, I was dumbfounded that they made the trade. But in all seriousness, it makes a lot of sense. When we talk about offer sheets, we know most of the time we saw the Shea Weber. We go back to the days with Joe Sakic and the New York Rangers, obviously in a different era now against the cap. But I think offer sheets can be valuable if you look at teams that are up against the cap and not star players, not your Jonathan Taves or your Patrick Kane, Duncan Keith, but teams that are up against the cap like a Chicago with mid-range players that are going to get big, big bumps. Don't you think those are the guys going forward that you really have to pay attention against offer sheets?
Absolutely. I mean, you're looking for vulnerability if you're another team, you know, coming in to do this. And I think, frankly, you're probably looking at an overpayment for the player because you have to give the team that holds his rights enough pause that maybe they won't match. I mean, I guess it can be a strategic tool used to put, maybe a rival into even further cap trouble if you extend one. But, you know, and if you're going to do it, I think ideally you're trying to get the player. And, you know, in the case of Chicago with Saad, and I think, you know, had Boston not traded Dougie Hamilton, there was a very distinct possibility that he was going to be subject to an offer sheet as well, which I think, you know, it's, again, it's kind of the reason we've seen two, you know, really promising young players who, you know, just coming out of their entry-level contracts getting dealt away from teams that liked, you know, much of what they were doing on the ice just because of some of these concerns, you know, that they wouldn't be able to keep them and that they were going to be cap casualties.
Okay, let's, and again, we can go over the place about trades and buyouts, and we'll touch on Mike
Whatever
Richard.
Whatever you got, Gord, I'm ready. I got my coffee here. I'm
okay, well, let's pretend.
Can you bring one in?
Toronto,
I just ran out of my first one, so.
Well, we can send, Matt won't come back for 4 hours unless we give him directions, but we'll figure it out. The other Matt Brown. Okay, so let's pretend we're Toronto 2 years ago and wondering if they're going to sign David Clarkson, who's the big fish out there in UFA world, which Toronto, I doubt, is that team. Who are the teams? Who's, like, in a few hours, where's Mike Green going? Where's Cody Franson going? Where's Antoine Vermette going? I mean, if you had to look at fits, and do you envision it being bang, 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 like the first 2 hours you're talking about most of these guys?
Maybe the first couple, but, you know, even though they have that free agent window now, I was actually trying to gauge this last night with a few people around the league. You know, the feeling was that these guys mostly wouldn't still have their destination in mind already, unless maybe there's a specific circumstance where a guy really wants to play in one place. But that, you know, the guys that are looking to weigh their options are still probably going to be presented with a few different things right at noon. And you know, while some of them will make quick decisions, I wouldn't be surprised if it was a little bit drawn out. I mean, let's face it, we've been talking about this, but this isn't the biggest crop of names. You know, I don't think that has hit the free agent market. So, you know, some teams might be a little bit more patient in the past, and it might take a little bit longer, but there's still going to be lots of money spent today, that much for sure. And it's a big day for those guys that are becoming free and are going to have some decisions to make.
Chris, Jim Rutherford has to be a little frustrated that hometown boy Brandon Saad goes to Columbus, who's going to have a team that is going to beat you up physically. Does he revisit the Kessel thing, or do they go through via free agency and spend some of the money that they have available?
Well, they're going to have to do something. And, you know, the reason, you know, I've been saying that the Kessel thing makes sense if a deal can be reached is that Pittsburgh just doesn't have a lot of money to spend. And then they're going to need sort of a money in, money out type of situation. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean it has to be Kessel. Perhaps they can, you know, trade away some contracts in one deal and use the money freed up to sign a free agent. But you know, I would expect Pittsburgh will be among the teams that are active. You know, you wonder with Alex Seven coming onto the market yesterday by having his contract put out by the Carolina Hurricanes, if he might be a fit as, you know, a winger that can score goals for them. You know, I do think Pittsburgh is one of the more motivated teams to make a deal on Saturday after the draft. You know, a good hour after the draft was over, their management team was still huddled on the floor, having what looked to be a fairly serious, animated conversation. I don't think they were making dinner plans. And then, you know, you do sense in that you know, particular case that there's a lot of pressure there to get something done. And you know, we've talked a lot about their closing window of opportunity to win. You know, I think they're trying to really make sure that they have the best possible team to take a run at here when they have Crosby and Malkin still in their 20s.
Chris, you know, you just used the word Semin and motivated in the same sentence. I don't think I've ever heard that.
Well, you know, a buyout could do that in a one-year deal on lesser money. You know, that's something that worked in Washington, yeah. Remember, his best, most productive seasons, they just kept signing him to one-year deals. They were you know, good money deals. But you know, I think that motivation and a carrot for that player in particular is important. But you never know. I mean, this is the thing about free agency. There's a little bit of risk involved in this. You know, some of the more established players, you know, you're signing them to long-term deals for the most part, and there's risk in the term there. And then I think with a guy like Alex Semin, there's clearly maybe the sixth goal, Alex Semin from last season, which prompted the Hurricanes, you know, small market team to have a huge buyout on him, or, you know, might even get another 20 or 30 goal season out of him. I think that's kind of what teams will be weighing as they make these decisions.
Gordon and I were talking off air, and that's exactly what George McPhee said. He goes, I would never, ever give Semin a long-term deal. Backstrom, I have no problem with. Ovechkin, no problem with. But Semin, no chance on a long-term deal.
Well, and you look at it, that when the moment he signed that contract, I mean, everyone, that was the eye roller the moment that Caroline, probably that was it for Jimmy Rutherford as well. So that's the next question I'm going to ask you. By the way, it's Chris Johnson of Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, joining Gord Stelic, Matthew Barnaby on our NHL free agent coverage here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Chris will be part of the Sportsnet coverage. That'll be simulcast beginning at 11 a.m. So where it's, you know, before the Brad Richards of the world or guys that are getting bought out, and maybe it is Semin this time that are saying, okay, I've had my money. I'll take a haircut to go some Mike Ribeiro last year, whatever. Who are those kind of guys? P.A. Parento, I mean, who are the guys that you think could be great fits this year that were unexpected, that they're there by virtue of being buyouts and would be good guys to take a risk on? I think you already mentioned Semin in that category.
Right. Well, you know, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting year. I mean, look at like a Cody Hodgson is still a 25-year-old player. And, you know, obviously we've seen him, and I know Matt's seen him a lot down there in Buffalo area play. But, I mean, this guy can't be done at this age, I wouldn't think. I mean, there's going to be a team, I'm sure, that gives him a contract. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's not a one-year deal in this case. If someone, you know, wants to invest in him and try to give him a fresh start and maybe different surroundings to get a little bit more out of him, because, you know, obviously he was a player that entered the league with a lot of promise only a few years ago. You know, he, to me, will be an interesting case. You know, I do think at the top end, the defensemen, you know, could be the guys that are worth the investment. You know, Cody Franzen and Andre Sequeira. Yeah, while not star players in this league, I could see them having a little bit of an Anton Strålman effect if they find themselves in the right situation. And, you know, last year, Strålman wasn't getting a ton of our attention. But, you know, come the playoffs when the Lightning were doing well, he was one of the guys that everyone was praising, you know, in that dressing room, and John Cooper and Steve Yzerman. I mean, you know, those guys to me are good value. I think that they're going to command some salary. But, you know, if you're a team that's looking to take the next step, there'll be some help there. So, you know, while we do get the occasional deal, like Steven Weiss's deal a couple years ago that was bought out yesterday, you know, obviously in hindsight, wasn't a very good decision by the Detroit Red Wings to sign up that money. There will be guys out there that help the team, I believe. It's not all bad on this day. It's just you got to be very careful when you're making these decisions.
Does Marty St. Louis end up in a spot with a contender?
I mean, that's going to be up to him. His case is unique because, you know, I'm not sure that he has to continue playing. I mean, I think he's at a position, obviously, part of the reason he asked out of Tampa was to live in the New York area. His wife's from Connecticut. It was, you know, a family decision in addition to, you know, some of the stuff with him and the Lightning. You know, the question will be, is he willing to move somewhere else? Because, you know, I'm certain that there will be teams interested. He still had 20 goals last season, and, you know, I know it was a drop in production. I know his age, but, you know, in a league where goal scoring is still tough to come by, you know, I would think that there would be interest. But, you know, the part that I don't have quite yet is where Marty's head is at and you know, how flexible he's willing to be. If it isn't one of the teams in the New York area, you know, is he willing to pack his family up, or at least pack himself up and give it one more year?
Okay, on the Toronto Maple Leaf front, I'm back in Twitter world, being a little more active, and I just, easy research-wise, talked about pre-tooth. People forget that the Pat Quinn era, I mean, much like when the Blue Jays got Jack Morris and Dave Stewart and Paul Molitor and Dave Winfield, I mean, four free agent signings in a couple of years. The Maple Leafs, Curtis Joseph in 98, Gary Roberts in 2000, Alexander McGillney in 2001, Joe Neuwendijk in 2002, Ed Belfour in 2002. So five great free agent signings then. Since 2005, Hal Gill in 2006, Jason Blake in 2007, Jeff Finger in 2008, Mike Komisarek in 2009, Tim Connolly 2011, and David Clarkson 2 years ago. I mean, there's just been ordinary players and out-and-out busts. And then the best signings have been Santarelli, Booth, and Mason Raymond. I mean, $3.5 million total for those three guys over the last 2 years, one-year contract. So I given the history, given where the Leafs are now, where do you expect them to be as far as maybe targeting a player or two as one of the bigger names in their sights, or might they do what Nonis did successfully the last 2 years?
Well, I think, you know, part of what you're highlighting there is that the nature of free agency has changed in that period, and, you know, the Pat Quinn Leafs didn't have a salary cap, and obviously the names you mentioned, there was much better players around the league, you know, getting to free agent status, whereas now everyone who's really any good and young is signing 8-year contracts with their team, and we're not seeing them hit free agency in their prime. But, you know, the Leafs strategy, as far as I've been able to tell, I did a chat with Kyle Dubas a week or so ago, and he was saying, you know, that the Mike Santarellis and you know, that's kind of the model for them right now, and they're going to be looking for value buys. You know, they think that they offer something to these free agents, and even though no one's expected this to be a great year for the Leafs, you know, there's a lot of exposure in Toronto. There's a chance for maybe some guys who are down on their luck or are not in a great part of their career cycle to sign it, you know, a valuable, or, sorry, rather, a, you know, kind of a reduced deal and come here and maybe build up their profile again and possibly even get traded by the trade deadline, which, you know, for the Leafs obviously realizes some assets. I mean, they turned Cody Franzen and Mike Santarelli into, you know, when you do it all at the end of the day, they got 2 seconds, round picks, a third, and Brandon Leipzig, you know, really for rental players. And you know, that's the kind of building I expect the Leafs to continue to do, and it starts today. You know, I think that they'll be active, but my guess is the names we see them sign, if any, will not be, you know, big headline grabbers, just more of the value buys.
I can't believe you brought up Jeff Finger. Can't believe you brought up Jeff Finger.
I'm a journalist like Chris Johnson.
Wow.
You
know,
You remember the Toronto Sun headline that day? Leafs give fans the finger.
Well, it's he only had 94 games with the Colorado Avalanche, and there's some stories that his agent basically said he had a 2-year deal for $1.9 million on the table from Colorado and was ready to sign it. Yeah. His agent said, no, I got a weird vibe about something. And the Leafs called, offered 4 years, $14 million. The only call, And Jeff
he
Fingers,
actually broke his leg running to sign the contract.
Well, and apparently his last 2 years, he wasn't even one of the top four defensemen on the Marlies, in all seriousness. And one line, apparently, his dad said, if I ever meet, and he mentions Cliff Fletcher, whoever, I would kiss him on the lips because about that contract. So anyway, that was one of those. Yeah, hey, that was weird.
I remember when I signed with Tampa Bay, and this was a 3-year deal, $4.5 million, guys. Not in this day and age, it's nothing, but I remember
nothing
I had four.
Nothing to laugh at either, though.
What's that?
Nothing to laugh at either, though.
No, and I didn't even get bought out, so I got the whole thing. That was pretty impressive. I probably should have been bought out from Jay Feaster, but I was just traded. But I remember when I the deal was on the table in the summer. I remember Larry Kelly, my agent. I was in Buffalo, and he goes, word of this is going to get out, you had four goals, and it's not going to, they're going to pull this off the table. He goes, we need you to drive to Syracuse. He met me halfway, drove from Ottawa, and I signed it, and they faxed it back. It was in the day of the faxes, faxing it back. So we met halfway in the middle of the night. I signed this contract, and he's like, thank God, I just wanted to get this signed because they're going to pull this thing off the table.
So you mean they thought you were Barnaby Jones or something like that? They were getting mixed up.
It was just the position I was in. I was going to be a UFA. They didn't even know I was going to be a UFA. They weren't even sure. They had messed up signs because of my first year. We had burned a year. So, yeah, it was a weird time and a fun time. But
well, I think there's lots of those kind of stories out there, Matt. You know, I've even heard of agents recently having trouble tracking down some of their players. It's the summer, you know, maybe they're on vacation and getting nervous about the same thing, that a good deal is going to go sour, and you got to do whatever you can to sign it when it's on the table.
Yeah, no, I mean, and funny things happen. Like a couple of years ago, a new owner in Buffalo signed, hey, get Christian Ehrhoff, whatever it may be. Years ago, Lou Lamoriello, as respected as can be, they don't offer contracts properly to a couple of guys like John Madden and Brian Rafalski. And so, I mean, a lot of little things like that. So here's one, and I want you to give it a minute, Chris, and I want Matthew as well. Because we started off talking about the Chicago Blackhawks and the dilemma when you win the Stanley Cup. And as you mentioned, apples and oranges, that it was easier for the Leafs with money to sign those guys or other teams back then compared to the cap world. And so Bob Goodenough, back before the lockout was settled in 2005, but realizing that they were losing the battle and a salary cap was going to probably be put in place.
You're trying to make me mad right now, aren't you?
No. I'm not making.
Every time I hear, and I love Bob Goodenough.
Yeah.
But every time I hear the name, I just see millions of dollars of just floating away.
Okay, but you're not going to do the Jim Everett thing with me like Jim Rome did and shove the, you know, if I say Bob, I'll call you Chrissy Barnaby. Okay. So anyway.
One more time.
Yeah. He showed me a sheet or an idea, because I used to visit him from time to time. And one was, okay, if we're going to have a cap, then there should be some relief for teams that succeed. In that, people like dynasties, people like strong teams. And his one final push was, let's use this past year, for example. So if you're the Chicago Blackhawks, you get a certain, say, $6 million of cap relief for the next year for winning the cup. If you're the team that made it to the final, say, Tampa Bay, you get $4 million of cap relief. If you're the two other teams that made it to the conference finals, you get $3 million extra for 1 year. Now, of course, NHL wouldn't go for it because it's more money. And nobody's really even fought for it or thought about it. I know it's a dead end, but I always liked that issue. I thought, yeah, you know something? The Chicago Blackhawks for 1 year deserve an opportunity to try to keep their core together. And I'd have no problem them getting, say, $6 million for argument's sake, which would have meant they could have kept Brandon Saad. I don't know what you think of that idea. Chris, we'll start with you, and then I'll hear from Matthew. But don't mention Bob Goodenough's name to Matt.
Well, it's the first I've heard of it, but... Yeah, I can understand why the PA would want that. I mean, in addition to the fact it's more money, often those teams are in a position to pay their guys more money. I mean, as soon as you win a cup, your third-line left winger is the best third-line left winger in hockey, and you know, so on down the list. We see lots of players, you know, really benefit from being part of that successful situation. I mean, you know what's funny, guys, is I actually believe in some ways the Blackhawks are better off for this. I mean, it's hard to say that sitting here right now because, you know, they've just lost one of their most promising young players. But, you know, I think having the regeneration they've had has helped keep a certain dynamic around the team, a certain hunger, you know, not letting, you know, certain things set in around them that, you know, that sort of there's a lack of comfort there. And, you know, I believe in ultimately it probably hasn't hurt them as much as, you know, some of us think, even though we can list off the names of, you know, really strong players they've had to let go since winning that first cup in 2010. But, you know, the biggest reason we wouldn't see the league go for that plan, in addition to the money, is that, you know, the biggest thing that this is all about, you know, I think other than controlling costs, is the league likes the idea that any team can kind of win from year to year, that there won't be dynasties. You know, even though fans may want that, that, you know, they're trying to create a system, I think, where no team stays bad too long. And you know, conversely, although it hasn't exactly played out, that they don't want to, you know, too many teams to stay very strong for too long. And you know, that might prevent it, you know, competitively if you're giving other teams an advantage.
Well, I agree. As a player, I like it. It creates more money out there, but you know, in theory it sounds good. In reality, you're giving the best team an unlevel playing field.
No, but don't they deserve it? The argument, now, first of all, his argument was more money in the pot. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought the other argument is just saying, why are these guys getting penalized for building the organization so well and so astutely and drafting well that you cut them a little piece of slack? And it's true. I mean, the Colorado Avalanche didn't face this. As I say, the Islanders, the Montreal Canadiens, Edmonton Oilers. Just food for thought. But as you mentioned, Chris, the Chicago Blackhawks have done it twice and won two more Stanley Cups. And this won't be the end of the world either.
Well, you know, we'll see. I mean, the issue they're going to come up against eventually, and they're not necessarily there right now. But, you know, Taves and Kane and Keith are, you know, are getting on in hockey playing years. And at some point, you know, those are obviously their core members of the team, their highest paid players. At some point, maybe they're not going to be able to drive the engine as much. But, you know, to this point, it doesn't seem to matter entirely who they have. I mean, they've done well. I mean, Brandon Saad is a good example of a player that jumped in their lineup. He wasn't, you know, a third overall pick in the draft and you know, managed to become a contributor. And I think the one ingredient we've seen on every successful team in the Cap era is you have to have players on their entry-level deals, yeah, who can at least make some impact, who, you know, they're not making a lot of money relative to the cap, but they're contributing above, you know, their pay grade. And I think that helps balance out either any bad contracts you have or maybe some of your veteran players who aren't contributing as much, rather, offensively as they have in the past.
Okay, I got to let you get ready. You got the TV coverage coming up that'll follow right after us at 11 a.m. Thanks as always, Chris.
No problem, guys. Have
Thanks, Chris.
Chris Johnston joining us from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca.
By the way, Bob Goodenow, if you're listening, the Chicago Blackhawks, their payroll's at $83 million. The cap world's working out not bad for the National Hockey League and the players.
Well, the other interesting one back then as well, he showed that there was that, you talk about relief for the different teams, right?
Yeah.
And they made it, the other owners made it, that there's no way they could compensate Chicago. Because back then they were annoyed at the Bill Wirtz era,
yeah,
and the dinosaur era, and really they could have qualified for some kind of compensation. So anyway, they made it, you had to be a metropolitan area under so many million, just the right size to Chicago. And it just shows astute ownership coming in of that franchise, and it turned things around in Chicago. We will have top of the hour. Jaromír Kekäläinen will be joining us, talk about the big trade yesterday. Aaron Ekblad, he's not going to be a UFA, but we'll talk to the winner of the Calder Trophy as well, and much more. NHL, free agent, signings, trades, you name it. We've got it all for you here. Matt Barnaby, Gord Stelick on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the best sports talk on the planet on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Well, happy Canada Day, happy free agent signing day as we get started early here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Gord Stelick, Matthew Barnaby, all the dealings that have been going on and getting set for what will start at 12 o'clock noon officially. Of course, Sportsnet hits the airwaves TV-wise at 11. We'll pick up their coverage here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And Matt, we were talking about you know, different moves. Obviously, Brandon Saad was the trade yesterday that dwarfed anything else that went on. But a couple of interesting moves, and the price for goaltenders was debated at the NHL draft. People wondered, did Tim Murray pay too much for the Buffalo Sabres, giving up a first-round pick and getting Robin Leonard? It showed the Edmonton Oilers were able to not give up a first and get Cam Talbot off the New York Rangers. Martin Jones, San Jose Sharks decide he's worth the price.
Dean Lombardi must not be in a great mood right now. You win a Stanley Cup. You don't make the playoffs. You have three of your players in some serious hot water this year when you go with Voinoff and you look at the Richard situation and Jarrett Stahl, and you're just looking going, what else can go wrong? So you trade Martin Jones to the Boston Bruins, and you think you got him in the East. And a day later, he's in San Jose, and you're going to be seeing him in the Pacific all year long. Just a terrible year for the Los Angeles Kings. As for San Jose, I think they get the best goaltender on the free agent market as a backup, as a guy that can come in. I mean, you could be in a worse situation. You could be the Dallas Stars right now spending $10.5 million on goaltender. I like this move for San Jose a lot. And I've again, San Jose had a tough year. Doug Wilson with his star player in Joe Thornton. But I like this pickup for them, and it makes sense for the Boston Bruins. So they got a great return. Makes a little bit more sense. I still don't get the Dougie Hamilton, but we're not going to go there again because I don't want to blow him out. But this makes sense for the organization. You're accumulating some draft picks, but I love it for San Jose going forward. This is a big goalie, small body of work, 7 shutouts, is going to get tested a little more than he probably did in L.A. because the defensive structure we have seen from San Jose needs drastic improvement. We'll see how he fares, but I like this trade, and I think he's a legitimate number one goalie going forward.
You know, it's funny, Matt, you mentioned about Dean Lombardi, and you can't, I mean, there's an element of relationships, and when he trades, as you say, Jones to the Boston Bruins, he is assuming they're going to sign him, and that makes everything clean for him. And then the Bruins get a first-round pick, something that San Jose wouldn't give the Los Angeles Kings. Or maybe they would. I don't know. But the Kings just don't, as you say, don't want to trade him within their division, within their conference. And this comes back to bite you. And I wonder if there were some other balls to fall. I don't know what they would be in Boston that changed it. You know, with we always assume after they got those 3 first-round picks that maybe there was more to do. But I don't know what they looked to do goaltending-wise. I think they just looked, wow, we can't turn down a first-round pick. We know how hard it was to get them after Robin Lehner. They were really not available anymore.
Yeah, I think for Boston, Tuukka Rask, you know, is going to play the majority of the games. So why keep Martin Jones there? You have Malcolm Subban. You have a college kid that's ready to turn pro. Malcolm Subban still needs a few more years in the minors, but you can't, I don't think, turn down that first rounder going forward for a guy that isn't going to play much for you. And Martin Jones, in all honesty, wants to be a number one. He's bought his time with Jonathan Quick and playing in his footsteps. So I think the time was right. I think it makes sense, this trade, for both teams. And I don't say that very often because usually it doesn't. I think the Saad trade makes sense for both teams. I think a lot of people around the NHL look at Anisimov and they're like, I really don't know much about him. I think that's what most fans are going to say. And in Chicago, in that number two hole, I think you're pretty, you're going to like him a lot, especially Chicago fans that are saying, why did we get rid of a Brandon Saad? Why? Well, reality was you had to. Second of all, I think you're going to like your return a lot in the coming years.
Jaromír Kekäläinen will join us, and we'll talk about that, the general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets, at the top of the hour. Meanwhile, we're not expecting Dougie Hamilton to be traded or Brandon Saad to be traded, but Kevin Bieksa's name had been kicked around there and was thought it just didn't get done trade deadline day for whatever reason, but better late than never. And the Anaheim Ducks did a lot of retooling on their defense corps, and they give up a second round pick.
I like the deal. It gives you some depth. It gives you some, you know, tenaciousness, a guy that plays pretty tough. Some guys say he picks his spots. I fought Kevin Bieksa. He's a tough guy. Throws left. In this day and age, I don't think you need to be all that tough, but always keeping guys a little off kilter is a good thing. I think he's a great leader. I think he'll fit in with this defensive core that's very young. You're going to lose a Francis Beauchemin, who reportedly is searching for a 3-year, $15 million deal. Again, today's Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs Day, we know that.
Look at Anton Stroman, $6.5 million. Beauchemin plays the most minutes there. I'm not his agent, don't get me wrong, but it's funny. We think about...
You're doing a great job, though.
Well, I try. But here's a guy that's been a throw-in. Yeah. I mean, he's been a throw-in in a couple of trades. The Leafs test drove him, put him back at Anaheim. And Bruce Boudreau's almost Mike Greendom, you know, resurrected his career and given him that kind of clout.
Strahlman's a lot bigger and skates a lot better, and he's a lot younger. Beauchemin is a very serviceable defenseman. Mm-hmm. I just don't know what that $5 million deal is going to look like in the last 2 years of it.
Okay, and maybe is that why Kevin Bieksa is at it? This gives him some options. I mean,
yeah, I just think he adds an element. I mean, you're roughly going to be in that same ballpark. Roughly, but I just don't think there's a lot left in that Beauchemin. He's been a great leader. He's won a Stanley Cup. I know he's done a great job in speaking with a lot of people from Anaheim with their youth, and he's very, very well respected from the kids in that organization. If someone gives him $15 million, God bless you. You must see a lot more left in that tank than I do, but I think BX is a better fit than a Beauchemin at this stage.
Okay, and as if not enough has happened the last 24 hours, and we anticipate more happening over the next 24, 48 hours, as a matter of fact, the next 5 or 6 hours. So did we not have the legendary, of course, Baltimore Colts moving trucks, the Mayflower Moving Company moving in the middle of the night, moving the team to Indianapolis? So did we have that happen last night, that they moved in Arizona, moved it to Las Vegas, moved it back? I mean, that was going crazy for a couple of hours. It's been totally debunked by Bill Daly and the National Hockey League as having no substance whatsoever.
Stupidity. Stupidity when you look at the report. You have to have some substance. And I don't even want to give them credit because I don't want to bring the name up. When you throw... A lot of people throw stuff against the wall just hoping to get headlines or clicks on their website.
Well, in this case, it worked for a while. We don't need to throw the name out there, but it was about a Winnipeg situation, Atlanta situation to Winnipeg happening again. So for about 3 hours last night, if you were heavy on Twitter, you were under the belief the Phoenix Coyotes were going to move to Las Vegas.
To me, there's a sense of professionalism. Again, we hear a lot of things. If we put everything we heard on Twitter... I mean, it would never stop, and literally 3/4 of it never comes true. And a lot of times there's even no substance to it. And you really have to do your due diligence when you throw stuff out there. I think you worry a lot of people, and it just creates a lot of concern where there doesn't need to be. People are looking for clicks on the internet, clicks on their website, and be that story quickly. So there was no foundation. NHL quickly jumped on it, ripped the story apart, and again... Are you going to move a team right now, or are you going to get $1 billion in relocation fees?
Well, it probably was a lot of it with last week about just talking about entertaining bids. So it got a little bit of legs, but we can say there will be no first free agent signing by the Las Vegas, whatever they may be, this afternoon. We'll be talking about a number of players that will be. And again, you mentioned François Beauchemin.
By the way, you're the only guy that I think actually still reads paper. There's an internet for that. You can just a couple clicks away.
What is this machinery?
What
here?
Is that little?
What
machine?
Are all these things?
clicking button.
I thought it was just to order off the shopping network. No, I support my guys here.
Yeah,
right? You know what's
hard
wrong
copies.
With paper? They're really right there. Look at that. Your jury will be big player. We got the NBA free agent. Top 10 free agents on the paper. I'll give you a copy to read later on in between
Perfect.
Your shows.
Perfect.
Mike Green, there's one, that interesting one that, again, you talk about Bruce Boudreau, allowed him to freelance, to develop a skill, big contributor for the Washington Capitals, big years, injury prone along the way, still only 29.
Does he get $7 million in the open market?
Boy.
And he's making like 6.2.
I know. Just takes one team.
Takes one general manager, not even a team, just one guy to lose his mind for a little second. Mike Green is a good player. He's going to do well on the open market. If you pay him $7 million, you are going to regret it. He's a good offensive D-man. He slots into their third pair in Washington. And there's no spot for him at that price tag. So at $7 million, no. If you can get him in that $5 million range, I think you have something if he's slotted the right way.
Well, and the other part, of course, term. It's not just the money. It's also the term. But generally, if you've come this far and you're going to get the big deal, the big money, you will get the big term, as Toronto found out with David Clarkson, say, 2 years ago. NHL free agent signing coverage. We've got it all here. Of course, we mentioned the trades. Brandon Saad yesterday, Dougie Hamilton last weekend. We'll keep you up to date, get you set for the TV and radio coverage at 11. Gord Stellick, Matthew Barnaby, with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.